Hola, hola. And for the last time in 2024, welcome back to Vos Memos. It has been quite a year of reading, a year of creating art, a year of career growth. And I want to take this episode to one, go through my top 10 books of the year, and two, share a little project I've been working on that I like to call the year in review. So hopefully I can inspire you to document your 2025. So without further ado, let's get into it. Alrighty, so like I said, I want to go through my top 10 books this year, and I will caveat the list by saying they are not in order. I tried to order them, but there's just so many genres and different writing styles, fiction, nonfiction. I just could not, in good faith, say like a memoir is better than a fantasy book. Like, I just didn't want to get into that much nuance. So these are my top 10, narrowed down from the 35 books I read this year. There were definitely some duds, though. I just didn't want to bore you with books I wouldn't recommend. So any of these books I would recommend in a heartbeat. And I'm kind of like, I'm really happy I read them, but I'm like, how am I going to top this list next year? And I know I will. There's millions of amazing books out there, but it's just kind of crazy to be like, oh, I like basically every month I read a banger. Like, I think, well, honestly, last year I only read about like 16 or so books, and I thought I was just going to challenge myself to read 20. And then I had to keep upping the number of books this year. So we'll see how many I do next year, but it's just been amazing to live so many lives through these books and through the characters in these books. I feel like my year was so much longer because of that. And yeah, okay, so enough rambling. I'll get into it. The first two books I'm going to talk about, and I've talked about them a little bit before on the podcast, are by R.F. King, Babel and Yellowface. So Babel's more of a fantasy. I think in my Goodreads review, I said Harry Potter meets Fight Club meets historical fiction because it's like a magical setting in Oxford. And it was so perfect that I read this book this year because I've always been really into linguistics, like since my senior year of college. And this book, the magic is in linguistics and the differences between languages. So I really enjoyed just the world building in Babel. I think some people are harsh on this book because there's just this subsection of fantasy readers that say if it's not Lord of the Rings caliber, then it's not good. And I am not one of those readers. I tend to give authors the benefit of the doubt. I'm not picking apart their plots or the worlds they're building. Maybe I'm just a shallow reader. I just appreciate the concept. Okay. And so if you take it for face value, I think this book is amazing. And it's a type of magic I hadn't really heard about before or seen it before. And like I said, I'm not that big of a fantasy reader. I was very close this year to just giving up on fantasy as a genre for me. I thought maybe it's just not it. After reading A Court of Thorns and Roses and A Court of Mist and Fury and hating them both, I'll link my review down below. But I just thought fantasy wasn't for me. But I think it's just fairies aren't for me. Maybe romantasy as a genre might not be for me. I'm not sure because I used to love romance. Romance used to be the only genre I'd read. And now I'm kind of like, maybe I don't really care about romance in books because it just seems to distract a little bit and weaken the plot line sometimes. So anyway, Babel, highly recommend it if you're looking for a little bit of a more historical fiction fantasy with that linguistic element. And then the same author wrote Yellowface, completely different. It is set in the real world, no magical elements to it. There's a set of friends, and one is a very successful author, one has been struggling for a long time, and the successful author dies. This happens like in the first chapter or something. I'm gonna try not to do spoilers. And basically, the less successful author steals the unfinished manuscript from the dead author, who happened to be of Asian descent, and this unsuccessful author is white. So you can see how that could cause an issue, and from the title of the book, Yellowface, where that might go. So I thought this was hysterical, super funny, super thrilling, and I was on the edge of my seat, like, what is going to happen? Like, how is this going to end? Is this going to end in disaster for our main character? And again, I think this might be categorized as a thriller. I am not the type to try to like figure out the ending of a book. And I'll talk about this later too, but I never see it coming. Like Frozen, I did not see that Hans was a villain until it was like being revealed. And most people that you would talk to, even when they were watching it, the film as a kid, they were like, oh yeah, of course, I saw right through that. I did not. And so that's kind of some insight onto how I absorb a thriller. I just, as much as I try to guess the ending, I will not be able to figure it out. So I don't try that hard because I'd rather just be along for the ride. I'm going to fall for every trap the author sets for me. I'm going to believe exactly who they're pinning it on, like until they finally figure out some other clues. Like, I don't know. I'm just along for the ride on thrillers. And Yellowface by R.F. King was very thrilling. So my next one is actually the last book I read this year, and I thought it might be recency bias, but I think it's actually just kind of a very interesting concept in a book. So this one is called The God of Endings, and it is a vampire book. It's from the perspective of a vampire right after she gets turned into a vampire in like the 1800s, and then it flashes forward every other chapter or so to the 1980s, where she's teaching a preschool. And yeah, like I think it's very interesting, like the vampire lore that's in it. I thought there were so many themes as I was listening to it. As I was listening to it, female friendship, the struggles of like motherhood, of marriage, of like finding a partner, losing a partner. I mean, of course, like when you have a book being told by a vampire, like there's going to be that whole immortality, is it really worth it? Because it is kind of tragic. If you're not among other vampires, you're just constantly losing people. And then of course, like in the middle of it, there's like World War II. So that was very interesting too, to get that historical element and literally like killing Nazis. That was badass. So I really enjoyed it. If you listen to the audiobook, and I will note which ones are good on audiobook if I listened to them that way, there is a French accent going on. And I struggle so much with like in my head remembering if a character has an accent. So that's what I really love about audiobooks, is they can make sure you're immersed in the right country, in the right like and yeah, like this happened later with Swiped, which I'll talk about at the end. I just forget where these people are and how they're supposed to be talking. So the audiobooks really are immersive in that way. So listen to the audiobook. I think this one actually probably has one of the lowest ratings on my top 10 list on Goodreads, and I think it's probably because it's very descriptive. So if you're reading it on your own, that might feel a little long or dry, but in an audiobook, the descriptions really make it come to life, and I feel like it's a movie being played in my ears. So take it for what you will. I really enjoyed it. I have not read any other vampire books, so maybe this is just my entrance into that genre. We'll see. I just really enjoyed it. So that was my third one. Next, we have Lady Tan's Circle of Women by Lisa C. I will never stop giving flowers to Lisa C. Her books are so good. They're always centering like women, women's history. And after you close a Lisa C book, you just feel so like you can take a deep breath and an exhale and just like appreciate how much women have contributed to society, to our history, to the world. So, yeah, this one was set in China following a female doctor, which was rare for that time, but she was very important in her community and her family. And then it also follows like those traditions from that period in China where there was like foot binding, where you're getting married off, where there's chicken pox, and like, do you stuff like chicken pox scabs up your kid's nose or not? Because if it gets scarred, there it's going to be harder to marry off those girls. Just such a different context, such a different time, and I learned so much about different cultures from Lisa See's books. The other one I read was Island of Sea Women. I read that in 2023, and just as good. And I think we have another one coming up for the book club in 2025. So I'm excited for another Lisa See, and I'm going to keep following her as an author because she's very inspiring, writes very well-researched, high-quality books. Highly recommend. So then my next two are memoirs, Crying in H Mart. I was crying when I was listening to this book. Like, it was so emotional, so heavy, but at the end, like, all of these memoirs, I feel like, usually will show you, like, a silver lining or a lessons learned. Because, I mean, at the end, like, it's life and life keeps moving, the world keeps turning, and you have to keep picking yourself up every day. And if you wrote a memoir, you probably were successful at picking yourself back up. This one also had like themes of, like mother-daughter relationships. And I have like, I love my mom so much. We have an amazing relationship. But I know for a lot of people, those relationships are tough and strained. So it's just good to step into someone else's shoes and get that perspective and empathize with like what it's like to have a difficult relationship like that. And especially under the stress of your mom has cancer, like the worst, everyone's worst nightmare, I'm sure. So give it a read. It's tough. Maybe have a happy book on the side, but it's a good one for sure. And then the other one I finally got to because of book club, Educated by Tara Westover. Educated has been on my bookshelf. I think it was given to me either as like a graduation present at some point or a birthday present. I don't know. It ended up on my bookshelf. And at the time, I just wasn't that into reading. And it sat on my bookshelf for years. And finally, book club was like, we're reading this. And I'm like, great, I already own it. I need to read it. So that was so amazing to get a chance to read it. I think I finished it in just one weekend. I just sat down and really like buckled in because you will need to buckle in for this one. There's a lot of tough images. And what was surprising to me when I finished it was just how much controversy there is. Even just this might be a common thing about memoirs is people being like, it didn't really happen like that. There's no way all that happened to you. Like just doubting the author, which I'd never thought to question. An author writing a memoir, like that's so weird. And of course, like people remember things differently. And Tara Westover often would make comments like, I remembered it this way. When I talked to so and so in my family, they remembered it a different way, but it was still kind of similar. So, and of course, if you're dealing with traumatic events, like Educated is, like the premise, what happened to her was she was very isolated. Didn't really get much of a K through 12 education. Her dad was very like religious, and it was like a type of Mormon faith, but way more conservative and extreme. And she eventually makes it to BYU and still is like having all these culture shocks because she was so isolated. So, and she gets a lot of opportunities, gets her education, sees how important it is, but sorry if that's a spoiler. Maybe that's a spoiler. But basically, there's a lot of tough things that happen to her and like unimaginable scenes. And I had to close the book a couple times when I was reading it because it was just so intense. And I'm still like really glad I read it though, because like I said, you get to just jump into somebody else's life. Like memoirs are people's real lives. And I think that's what really impacts me is like, whoa, that's not just like a fantasy world, like a crazy battle that they fought dragons. Like, no, like that was their real life that they actually had to go through. And it just really grows you, like, because you're absorbing that story and you're able to kind of use that lens to have empathy for other people in your life. So I think it just underscores like that idea that you never know what's happening to somebody in their life. Okay, so the last four books on the list, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which is just a basic fiction novel following two characters that are just best friends and start a company, a gaming company together. As somebody with a computer science background, I thought that premise from the beginning was super interesting. And the fact that like one character was a woman in STEM, like that's pretty rare. And it was just such a beautiful novel. Like I feel like I could cry thinking about it right now. Because I cried a lot while I was reading it. Yeah. This one's just such a beautiful story. And I read it very early on in this year, and the fact that it's like still stuck with me and it's still in the top 10, I feel like speaks for itself there. Definitely, if you're the type that just likes straight fiction and beautiful friendships, I think this is one for you. Kind of on the opposite end, we have Native Tongue, which is not a new book by any stretch of the imagination. It is a classic science fiction book, again, with the linguistics thread. This one is a family in the future. I think it's still in the future, where basically there's a family of linguists, and they're just known for having kind of a gift of being able to understand languages, learn languages, acquire languages. And the government uses this family to communicate with aliens and create trade deals that way. So there's this whole society, but the women in this society are very restricted. If you're not a linguist, they are extremely restrictive on women, and even the women linguists are restricted. So while they are communicating and filling out their governmental duties to communicate with aliens, while I'm explaining it, it kind of sounds crazy, they are also plotting to create a language that only women can understand. And they are going to use that language to subvert the government, subvert the powers that be, and free themselves, basically. And the crazy part is, like, the language that the women are creating for women, it has words for things that only women understand to begin with. So, for example, like period pain, like that would be one word in this language. And even more specifically than that, it would be like period pain in your back or period pain cramps. Like that would just be one word and it would immediately communicate faster to another woman what you're going through. And that's just like one of the examples I remember. But yeah, like this book really made me think about how our language is so male-centric to begin with and what it would be like if women were more powerful in impacting language. So that one really stuck with me, really made me think. So, oh my God, Bobby is joining us for this last bit of the segment. And so we'll keep going here. We have got two left. I Hope This Finds You Well by Natalie Sue. I had a whole podcast segment on this one because it was so funny and it ties in so well to just being in the office, working in the office, the monotony of it all. And the premise of this one is this girl, woman, she hates her coworkers and she writes in like white text at the bottom of all her emails all the things she hates about her work coworkers when she sends them emails. And she gets found out. And so they're monitoring her. She's on basically a PIP. Except that the monitoring software kind of does the reverse of what it's supposed to do. And now she can see everyone in the office's emails without them knowing. So you can see how that could quickly become complicated. And I was laughing out loud while I was reading this book, and I really loved it. Very lighthearted, but at the same time, like talking about really heavy stuff like depression, anxiety, just the stresses of 9 to 5 office culture, and also being biracial or coming from a different background than the rest of your peers. So I thought that was a really amazing read, and I got a lot out of that one. And then the last one on my list is just for fun, really. It's called Swiped. The author goes by the pseudonym L.M. Chilton, which is cute. And I think on the back flap, it actually says the author had been on over 100 online dates before he wrote this book, which sounds awful. Like, I get why you would write a thriller about online dating. Basically, this girl in, I think, the UK, she's going on dates, like swiping through, basically addicted to going on dates, almost. Except suddenly, all the guys that she's going on dates with, like they were just first dates that never really went anywhere, they're getting murdered. And who is the only connection to all these guys? Our main character. So, I read this book really quickly because, I mean, it's just a fun one. Like I said, if you're the type to pick apart a thriller, if you're gonna guess it from the beginning, like I would not read this one because you will probably guess it right away. But for me, I was on the edge of my seat. Who's behind all of this? And every single wrong turn the author led me down, I was like all the way there. So, just a fun one. And yeah, like that's my top 10 for this year. We bridged a lot of different genres, like book lengths, book sizes. This year I challenged myself to like read all the books that I hadn't read on my bookshelf, which were 10 at the time. I got it down to only 2 left, which is huge. 'Cause now I can just finish those out in 2025 and feel like I'm on a good track. I don't like having things on my bookshelf that I haven't read because I feel like a fraud. I'm like, I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just on display in my home. So that's kind of why I want to like get through these last two. And then, yeah, what else? I challenged myself to read some poetry. I read a poetry book. It was very sad. The World Keeps Ending and the World Goes On by Franny Choi. Devastating. Every single poem wrecked me. I think it took me like a couple weeks to get through it, and it was a super tiny book, but I just couldn't really read more than one or two of those poems a night because they were so heavy. Which, powerful poetry, right? Like, if you can do that much with so few words, then you're doing it right. So, amazing poetry book if you want to like include some poetry into your queue. I think, at least in the book talk community, I don't really see people reading poetry. I think I see a lot of overhyped books, romance books, smutty books, and like people sleep on it. Like poetry has a lot of substance to it, and it's important to just get that different writing style and learn a few new words, you know? So I have another poetry book that's on my shelf unread, so I'm going to work on that one next year. That is my reading recap. And so the last thing I want to leave you with for the year in this last podcast episode is my year in review project, which I found this, and I think I mentioned it in a podcast episode a while back. It's basically a digital scrapbook where you create a magazine of your year. And you can do this on a variety of softwares. I did it in the Affinity Suite, which is, I'm going to recommend it. It's pretty good. One and done purchase, no subscriptions, like freaking Adobe. But if you have Adobe, you could do it in InDesign. If you have Canva, just do it in Canva. Like, it doesn't have to be that big of a deal, but it's basically just a way to record all your memories And I like really took the magazine part to heart. I wrote little articles up about all the different events I was covering. And I don't know, like next year I'm going to do it like month by month, obviously. Like this year I found it, this project idea so late in the year, I had to kind of rush and do them all at once. But next year I'm excited to just take my time, like do it as a monthly activity, a monthly reflection. And yeah, like I felt like just going through all my pictures this year, like I forgot a lot of the things I did. And then I was able to just take a little walk down memory lane and write in the articles the details that I'm gonna forget in a couple years from now. So that when I look back at the magazine, I'll remember them. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with the project. I had a lot of fun being creative with the spreads. In college, I did a lot of graphic design, and I felt like that skill was something I wanted to brush up on again. So, just another great way to, keep your skills up to date, learn something new if you're not a big graphic designer. And yeah, like I love scrapbooking. I've been doing traditional scrapbooking since my grandma got me my first scrapbook in like elementary school, but I am also a perfectionist. So, sometimes that scrapbooking activity can become more of a chore than a hobby. So the digital scrapbook really let me be free with it. I could go back to spreads that I finished and be like, this isn't really following like the design direction I want to go in anymore. So I'd just like make tweaks, make ch color changes, like font changes, and really created like a cohesive look to the magazine that way. And now that I have a color scheme and font style, like maybe I'll just keep that so that each magazine kind of does look uniform. Who knows? We'll see. It's a 2025 project. So, yeah, and then like the very last spread, I am talking about this podcast, how far I've come with it. I mean, when I first started it was just audio, and now I do a video podcast every week with it. I do short form content on Instagram at Voice memos and on YouTube, sometimes on TikTok when I'm not giving up on that app. Who knows? Might get banned. But, I don't know. I don't know. My production quality has gone up a lot. I'm really prioritizing like good lighting. I feel like my scripting and outlining has gotten a lot more streamlined. My editing has gotten a lot more streamlined. And, these are stuff behind the scenes, but you just learn so much by working on a project for a year. Which is huge. Like, I can't believe I've been podcasting for a year now. This is my longest podcasting streak ever. I think before this, my longest podcast was like 5 episodes. So I'm just proud of myself for sticking with it. And if you've stuck with me from the beginning, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. If you're new on this episode, like, welcome. I'll be back in just a couple weeks. And if you've just joined along the way, I really appreciate you too. So thanks for listening. I think I'm going to leave it there. I will link a bunch of things that I talked about in the description below. If you liked this episode, follow me on YouTube or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Give it a rating, give it a like, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.